Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two, that's James Hamm, I'm Kyle Madsen, Joe Brazil on the ones and twos, and we're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. We're taking you right up to noon, and then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC. Good fit. we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC, and then we'll take you up to 4 o'clock right here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. If you're listening on 1320 AM, that's our radio station. Salute. Good morning. Hello. If you're watching on YouTube and Twitch, don't forget about us when you get in your car. Hop over to ESPN 1320 AM or
98.5 HD2 on if you're doing HD.
Yes, if you have an HD radio, which yeah. If you're Tesla.
Tesla
and other various electric cars.
Mm-hmm.
98.5 FM HD2. Don't forget about us when you're not on YouTube and Twitch.
Yeah.
So we were talking at the break about this exhaustive coaching search the Kings did not partake in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm inclined a little bit. I'm gonna do the bad radio thing. I'm gonna be on the fence here. Because I don't necessarily have a problem with the way they went about this. Their interim coach was above 500 last year in a season that was kind of a mess. He had a 51 game audition, and if the people doing the hiring are like, yep, we saw enough in that audition that that's all the interview we need, he's the guy. Okay. But I also understand why you would want him to go out and go, hey, you know what? Dave Yeager's available. Nate McMillan was the name you said at the break. Nate McMillan's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Budenholzer's out there. Michael Malone's out there. Any of these guys? Are you bringing these guys in just to A, do the interview? And maybe somebody blows you away with their thoughts on the Kings roster and what they can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or B, you at least get, what? For example, the 49ers. When they interviewed Brandon Staley for their defensive coordinator position, I don't think they had any intention of hiring Brandon Staley to be their defensive coordinator.
Mm-mm.
Just what he does defensively and what they do defensively were just a different. But they had gotten torched defensively. And they wanted to start figuring out, okay, what are some adjustments we need to make? So they went and got his thoughts from his point of view of defense on theirs. And then they ended up keeping him on the coaching staff, and that didn't end up going great. But I'm a little bit surprised they didn't do that. Where, man, think what you want about Michael Malone as a leader, and if he's too negative or he doesn't like Sacramento or whatever it is, whatever your thoughts on Michael Malone are, good coach with a lot of experience.
Well, yeah,
get
but
him in the building and interview him.
Michael Malone was never going to come back to Sacramento.
Okay, though. No, that's fine. That's fine. I don't even care. Maybe he doesn't take the interview. The point is, fine. Pick a different name. Mike Budenholzer. Mike Budenholzer won an NBA title.
Yep.
Get him in here and see what he thinks. Maybe he says something to spark Scott Perry and goes, you know what? We're not going to hire this guy. But you know what? That was a really interesting thought he had about Domantas Sabonis and Malik Monk in the pick and roll or whatever. I don't know.
No, I get you. The lack of a process sort of cuts you off from...
I'm a big process guy. Everybody knows that about me.
Yeah, but I mean, I get it because it does like bring other voices in the room and different ideas in the room. I totally get that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can do the same thing with assistant coaches. You can bring in a whole bunch of former head coaches and do the same exact thing. Look, Vivek wanted to make Doug Christie the head coach when they fired Luke Walton in the 2021-22 season. He did. And instead, they went with Alvin Gentry. Alvin Gentry, part of the negotiation was whether or not they were going to give the job to Doug or they were going to give it to Alvin Gentry. Mm-hmm. At that point, Doug had been an assistant for 17 games.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a mess. There was no one who was fixing that. There was... That was a train off the rails, careening down a cliff. That was a hot mess.
Mm.
Alvin Gentry did his best just to make the season, just to hold it all together.
Yeah.
And even he wasn't able to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So I think when we talk about it, why there wasn't an interview process or anything like that, there was. Mm-hmm. Doug Christie, number one, has been in the building for, 10 years,
mm-hmm.
right? At least. I don't know how long it's been since Doug But it's got to be right around 10 years, right? Where he's at least part of stuff that's going on.
Even as a broadcaster.
So, but even as a broadcaster, you have conversations. You don't think Doug Christie gets invited to every holiday party that Doug Christie is part of, like different discussions that we're not part of.
Especially as a former player.
Yeah. So it's not like, so him and Vivek have a relationship. Him and the, upper management has relationships as well. Mm-hmm. But you just gave a guy 3.5 years as an assistant coach, and he did perfectly fine. He was a big part of, like, the scouts. You trusted whether Mike Brown wanted Doug on his staff or not, maybe not fully, but he trusted him to take Domantas Sabonis and work with him every summer and make Domantas Sabonis into a better basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he trusted him with that. And so I don't know what more people want when they're looking around. It's like there are guys with a lot less experience that have been given jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because, Doug waved to his wife while he was a basketball player, and now you're like, oh, no, that guy can't be a coach. No, that's ridiculous. Like, Doug's put in the time. He's put in the energy. He's done the work to do what it takes to be an NBA coach. 10 years ago, 8 years ago, driving to and from the city, Doug wants to be a coach. Okay, Doug, then go work at go to the coaching symposiums, go to the Pete Newell big man camp, do these things, do the steps that you have to do. Mm-hmm. Like, look, we're at a point where the guy's been around the game again for over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
He's in it fully. He has conversations with everybody. He's a guy who bridges all kinds of, like, he's able to reach people.
Yeah.
To talk to people in a way that they are intrigued and they listen.
Yeah.
And so, like, look, whether it's going to work out or not, I don't know. But again, there's only one head coach that's really worked out in Sacramento, and it was Rick Adelman.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, there's so many of them. Doug Christie's the 10th head coach I've covered in 15 years.
I think the other thing about exhaustive coaching searches, and when you say what made me think of this was you saying that there's been one successful coach in Sacramento, one really successful coach in Sacramento.
The only other one is Mike Brown.
Right. So the other thing about this exhaustive coaching search is if they went with a different person, there's no name out there. There's one name out there that intrigues me. But the rest of them would have been so uninspiring. If they went and got Dave Yeager, would we be doing backflips right now, collectively? Like, oh my God, they did it. Wow, the Kings are so back because they got Dave Yeager as the head coach. Like, no, probably not.
For a second
For a second time. I think Dave Yeager's a darn good basketball coach, but, like, we've seen it. We know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Doug Christie went 27-24 last year. Regardless of the job you think he did, it's on the fly. He was an interim coach. He gets an offseason to get his arms around his coaching staff, delegating responsibilities, getting people he trusts, ideally getting people he trusts in the building. Like, now we get to see, okay, can he actually, like, coach? I think he's got the mental side of it down. I think he's got the motivational aspect and getting players to engage and buy in. I think he's gotten that down. Now, is what he's getting them to buy into going to work? Well, that's why they play the games. I have the same level of confidence that I would have had they hired Dave Yeager or Mike Budenholzer or Doc Rivers, or I'm just picking big names now, or Jeff Van Gundy. Like, all right, I guess.
Yeah, I would say this too. Like, you gave him an opportunity to run the team for 51 games.
Mm-hmm.
If he went 20-31, I think we would all have a different idea.
Very different idea.
If he went 15-36, it'd be like, hey, no.
Yeah.
But when you consider the situation and the fact that he did run he took a team that was 5 games under 500, like, he went 20-11 to start. Like, then they had injury issues. They had all kinds of issues down the stretch. Like, there was a lot of chaos in this season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he did a bad job at all. And again, you can circle the fact that they got to the play-in game and they just got railed. Like, okay, you can say that's fine. They got their butts kicked. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But at the same time, like, I don't get that one game shouldn't matter. And in fact, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter for anything. the Dallas Mavericks went on and they got their butts kicked as well. Mm-hmm. Like right after they, yeah. And then the team that beat them, they got absolutely destroyed.
Yeah.
So like, I don't think it really matters what that one game at the end of the season, the fact that the team didn't show up, it's a bit concerning,
mm-hmm.
but again, like go out there and make changes, like build this thing up. Don't like, I don't think it's a complete tear down. A lot of people do. And I also mm-hmm. know that they're not going to tear it down. Yeah. So,
which may be a whole other problem. Does Zach Man 3 on YouTube?
Okay.
Zach, you're just going to be Zach today. Sorry if that's not right. You're going to be Don. Doug Christie is the King's attempt to do a Dan Campbell hire a leader of men who can instill belief and trust. The thing that the Lions did with Dan Campbell was they surrounded him with the right people.
That's right.
Ben Johnson was an awesome offensive coordinator. Aaron Glenn was a stellar defensive coordinator. Both of those coordinators have now gone on to head coaching jobs. Aaron Glenn with the Jets and Ben Johnson with the Chicago Bears. That's what the Kings need to be doing with Doug Christie. Is now, okay, he's going to be your head coach. And are there things he might get wrong? Are there things he's going to have to learn along the way? And are there going to be some losses where like, hey, that one's on Doug? Yeah, 100%. Every new coach goes through that. But I think you mitigate some of the risks of hiring a first-time head coach by surrounding him with coaches who have done it before and surrounding him with people who he can lean on and who he can trust to go, hey, how do I do X, Y, and Z? Or what would you do in this spot?
Yeah.
That has to be the next step coaching-wise.
Well, that, and he has to be able to delegate. And in order for him to delegate, he has to have a group of people that he trusts 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, look, I think we both, like, think very highly of Robert Saleh.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
A leader of men.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Jesus Christ could not coach the Jets to a winning season, like, or to the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't matter who, you know, George Halas, like, mm-hmm. Bill Parcells.
Yeah.
Like, no one is going
not
to save
this
that
this iteration of the Jets, yeah.
Yeah, well, or any iteration in the last 50 years.
Guess that's true.
And that's, you know, so, again, whether Doug is going to, I look at Doug and I say, yeah, he's a leader of men like Robert Saleh.
Mm.
He is. He's a guy who comes in and he can capture the imagination of a room, right? But you've got to support him. And I've been saying that since the beginning. And he didn't. I know. There's no way he felt the support this year in that 27 and 20, that last 51 games of the season that he needs to feel from here going forward.
Yeah.
He just didn't. And so hopefully that's where they take the next logical step is to actually put some money and some, you know, some assets into building a coaching staff that makes sense.
What? I know we've named a bunch of people here as, you know, people they would have interviewed for a head coaching job if they had done this exhaustive search.
Mm-hmm.
Are those, is there potential, do you think, that maybe a person like a Dave Yeager is on the radar as a assistant, lead assistant, and coming back in that role?
I would love to see Dave Yeager back in Sacramento.
It doesn't have to be just.
Yeah. I mean, we've heard Dave Yeager's name mentioned in Sacramento for the last, I don't know, month. In just weird ways, like it's popped up, but he's not the only name. Like recently I've heard like Mike Woodson's name as like a potential support staff guy. You know, I think we're going to hear more names as time goes by of assistants that have experience, have head coaching experience. I've said this a bunch of times, if Doug could call Elston Turner and say, hey, do you want a new challenge mm-hmm. outside of Minnesota. Elston has been in the league forever. He's been in Sacramento twice. He was part of Rick Adelman's staff while Doug was a player. He came back and was part of Dave Yeager's staff. Elston Turner is a great defensive mind and could help this team.
Sure.
Because it's not just, hey, Doug, what's your defensive identity? And Doug's like, play hard and, you know, teach
right.
like the basics of how to defend, but also like finer nuances of how to defend.
Yeah.
But then there also has to be schemes. And when schemes aren't working, there has to be another scheme.
Yep.
And I think that's one of the biggest disasters that I've ever seen this last year was how does a coach like Mike Brown, number one, Like, he's a defensive-minded coach. He's a great defensive-minded coach. I mean, he won championships as a defensive coordinator for the Golden State Warriors. How did they not have an idea of how to fix the three-point shooting defense over the last 2 years? Like, how? Like, how did that happen?
It's baffling.
It is absolutely baffling. But also, like, look, not, and this is not to bag on Luke Laux or Mike Brown. Like, why would you make Luke Laux your defensive coordinator when Luke doesn't have that experience at all? Mm-hmm. Like, this was a team that had problems a year before on the defensive side of the ball. Bringing in a young assistant coach that's been known for offense his whole career and having him coach the defense and come up with schemes, I'm not sure that that was the smartest move either. Mm-hmm. And it did not work out. No. Like, this defense was not good, and it had, like, a fatal flaw that you could not overcome in most games.
Yep.
So
we're going to give away $500 in the next segment. Are you giving you an opportunity to win $500? Because D'Lo and Casey are also going to give you an opportunity to win $500. So get to ESPN1320.com right now. Go find the Jump Shot Jackpot Giveaway contest page. Should be front and center.
Mm-hmm.
It's courtesy of Folsom Lake Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, home of the big guy Vince Bloom. We're going to give you a keyword. Coming up next, you're going to enter that at ESPN1320.com at that contest page, and you'll be entered to win $500. D'Lo and KC will also be giving you a word. You can enter that word as well to give yourself two chances to win $500 today, courtesy of Folsom Lake Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. We got that coming up. We'll dive into the NBA playoffs, and we've got some more King stuff to kind of put a bow on this Doug Christie news. Doug Christie is the head coach of the Sacramento Kings. We're talking about it here on ESPN 1320. We're the Insiders, sponsored by Jiffy Lube at Sacramento Sports Center.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento sports leader. Now, back to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
And James is over there. Joe Brazil's behind the glass. I'm Kyle Madsen. We'll be with you until noon, then we'll hand it off over to D'Lo and KC. I could not believe what I watched in Miami last night.
Yeah.
I've seen teams quit NBA games before. You see, they just kind of throw in the towel. You see, we've seen it happen with the Kings. I see it. If you watch enough basketball, I believe every team at least one time during a season just quits a game. I don't think I've ever seen it to the degree that the Miami Heat quit against the Cavs yesterday. That game started out 30-8. The Cavs could have stopped scoring with 9.5 minutes to go in the third quarter, and they still would have won.
Oh.
You could take out the Cavs' highest scoring quarter. They scored 39 points in the third quarter. If you take away all of their points in that quarter, the Heat can keep their points. You take away all of the Cleveland Cavaliers' points in the third quarter, all 39 of them, and they still won the game by 16 points.
Mm.
The talent disparity between the Cavs and the Heat was not... The fact the Cavs swept the series was not a shock. I was surprised the Heat went out the way they did. They got punked twice at home.
I'd say this too.
That's a surprise to me.
Like, we want to hold people accountable for, like, what we saw in the play-in game, right? Where the Kings just got crushed, right? What about this? This is like a franchise that is known for stability, that has one of the great coaches in the history of the NBA.
Yeah.
I mean, Eric Spoelstra.
He's the best coach in the league right now?
I mean, top three.
Top three pretty easily.
Yeah, without any question. And they lost by, was it 57?
55. Only 55.
Yeah, and that's two games in a row, right, where they just got crushed.
Yeah, they got smoked the last two games of the series.
Yeah, so, I mean,
I believe, just real quick, the margin of victory for the Cavs was plus 122, which is the largest margin of victory in a playoff series of all time.
That's wild. Well, I'm going to guess the last two games of a series, too. There's one.
80 points or whatever it was.
55, and they lost by 37.
Oh, 92. So,
92 points. 92 points in two games. So,
two games.
But my point is that, Like, if you're going to, like, rail Doug Christie, get all over Doug Christie, get angry with Doug Christie because his team got beat in a play-in game against the Dallas Mavericks. I mean, this is, like, one of the great coaches in the league who just got crushed by 92 points over two games. Like,
right.
It happens.
It does.
So
I'm just shocked that it happened to Miami.
Yeah.
If this was the Orlando Magic, okay, I'm a little surprised because I thought they'd give Boston a better series, but, you know. Miami Heat, their whole thing is Heat culture. Their whole thing is this doesn't happen. They played not close games, but they stayed in contact for the most part with the Cavs in the two games in Cleveland. And then to come home and lose those two games by 92 points?
Kyle, what
I was stunned. This is not like me being like, wow, the Heat have they were the less talented team. They should have gotten swept. I would not have guessed that would, of all the teams to have that happen, I would have assumed like, oh, that happened to Memphis or that happened to Orlando. Not
Atlanta.
Not the Heat.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the Heat.
What if I told you, Kyle, that trading your best player at midseason is not a formula for success?
Well, true.
Just saying.
But Pat Riley got his way.
Mm.
Culture.
Okay.
So who's the real winner here?
Pat Riley, and the game of life, clearly.
Speaking of the Miami Heat trading their best player, they traded him to the Golden State Warriors, who went up 3-1 last night with a 109-106 win over the Rockets. There's so much to take away from this.
So much, man.
So, if you'd told me that going into the series, Golden State is going to have a game where they don't have Jimmy Butler, and then they're going to have another game where Steph Curry scores 17 points on 2 of 8 shooting from 3.
Mm.
And I think he was 6 of 13 from the field. I would have just assumed they lost both of those games by many, many points. And they won them both.
I watched.
That's pretty impressive.
Realistically, we talk about this all the time, the steps that NBA teams have to take, mm-hmm. right? You got to get to the playoffs. And once you get to the playoffs, you got to take your lumps in a first-round series. And you got to learn from that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, hopefully year two, year three, you start to ascend, right?
Right.
I thought last night was the biggest example of what we're talking about. You had I don't even know how to describe him, but a complete clown show in Draymond Green.
Just a total mess.
Disrupt an entire game, destroy every bit of flow and every bit of any, like, that game got dirty and nasty. And he should have been thrown out at least twice.
Yeah.
And then he comes up in the last seconds of a game after he had to sit because he had 5 fouls and he had a flagrant foul and he had a technical foul and he had to sit.
I didn't even know you could get a flagrant and a technical and have 5 fouls and still be eligible to play in the game.
That was such a dirty out by the officials. It was such a dirty out.
So here's, okay, so before we get angry about it, I thought the entire fracas beforehand.
Yeah.
I've never seen a technical foul for taunting. I've genuinely never seen that.
Okay.
When Steph got fouled and he held up 2 fingers on Dylan Brooks. And then he got a tech for that. I didn't think that either anyone in that entire thing should have gotten a T.
Mm.
Dylan Brooks... Jabari Smith had, I think, Quentin Post by the neck. So maybe that gets one. But I thought that was a big, like, okay, this is much ado about nothing. I thought maybe when they reviewed, they'd get Draymond for a moving screen.
Okay.
It was maybe going to be the outcome there. 3 techs felt like a lot.
That, I think they're trying to rein it in, but go ahead.
Yeah, right. No, I think so. So that's where on the next one, it's like, oh, that's a T for sure. But they already gave him one that he probably didn't deserve. So I actually thought the way they did it was smart because the Rockets needed to get some kind of reward there. They needed that they deserved some kind of free throws. So you get the flagrant, you get 2 free throws in the ball. He goes to the bench. I didn't hate it.
Yeah, but there was so much to it. There was the flinging your legs down on a guy's head.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was a kick. There was a kick while they were getting up that was like, oh, yeah, that's not good either. Like, what are you, like...
It's weird.
What I hate is that we have to talk about this trash every single time. Mm-hmm. And I'm not calling him trash. I'm calling what he does trash.
The way he plays, yeah.
Like, and it's not even the way he plays. It's the way he acts and conducts himself.
Yeah.
Like, the way he plays, he's still a great defender. Mm-hmm. Like, he still can hit a three when you want. Yeah.
If this was just guy, be like, all right. Like, just cool. That's like Isaiah Stewart, right?
Yep.
Just, all right, whatever. You're going to. But it's infuriating because he does this stuff. And it's like, bro, you don't need to do that. Like, it doesn't. He is a very, very good defender still. You saw it on the last play of the game.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing here? And what is. It's Golden State's fault because they have.
Enabled
this.
Yeah. Steve Kerr, and Steph Curry. The whole group.
I think I bring this up. I feel like I bring this up a lot because we talk about this a lot because there are a lot of incidents during the season, every season with Draymond. But Ethan Strauss wrote about this in, I think, 2016. And the conundrum of, okay, we have this guy who is a generationally great defender who the offense runs through.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have to deal with him potentially being ejected every time he steps foot on the floor. And for turning games like last night, which is already a very competitive, very physical series. It looks like 1997. And then turning it into
whatever.
What? I've run out of things to say, and this is not in defense of Draymond Green. This is in, okay, it's 2025. I've been having this conversation for 13 years.
Yeah.
I'm out of stuff to say. It's trash. It sucks. It's annoying to watch. We had an awesome basketball game last night, and this is the main headline from it. There's the, it comes with the territory aspect of it.
Yeah.
But to me, that's what you say about Steph Curry turning the ball over. Yeah, you know what? Hey, he's going to have two or three turnovers a game that really make you upset, but you know what? You live with it.
Yeah.
A
Buddy Hield.
But, well.
Turnovers
well,
or.
Boy. Right, but that's something you live with. The yapping is one thing. I don't mind if you're going to yap and you're going to be loud. Okay, yap and be loud. It's the dragging player to the ground. It's the flailing arms and legs. And it's, again, this is not new. This is not last night. Mm-mm. The reason this is a problem, the reason we're having this discussion, if that had happened in the Pacers-Bucks game, and it was instead of Draymond Green and Tari Eason, it was Andrew Nembhard and AJ Green. We are not talking about this.
Oh, no.
Not even a little bit.
No, but it's just that we've been dealing with the same exact thing for so long, and we've seen it so many times play out exactly the same. And you're, every single time, you're wondering why the league doesn't do something. Like, I would not be surprised at all if the league reviews every bit of tape and Draymond Green is suspended for the next game. I wouldn't. Because I think that there were enough things built into that game where you're like, come on, man. But at the same time, he got in their head. And mm-hmm. this is why we talk about young teams trying to get through the playoffs, trying to mm-hmm. figure it out. Like, Draymond is basically doing the same act that he's done, but while they won four championships,
mm-hmm.
while they just kept being great.
Yeah.
And so, like, this is just a continuation of the same act. It's old, it's tired. It still works.
It still works.
And we watched a young team. I said it from day one before this season started. Houston Rockets are the most talented team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
You're watching that right now, and you're like, oh, my goodness, what are they going to look like in two
years? They're so sick. Dude, they're – can I – go ahead. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
Well, I mean, just like the Amen Thompson thing. You're watching a guy become a superstar in front of you. I hate that all they do is iso ball. I hate that it's either him or it's Şengün or it's – Fred VanVleet hoisting from 30. Those are like their only three options. They have nothing else that they can do right now against Golden State Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
But still watching Amen Thompson become a two-way superstar.
That's
crazy.
It's from the Rockets' perspective. Those are the two things. Is you can tell, you can see Kings Warriors a couple years ago. Same sort of deal. A team that's been there before, a team that hasn't. I did not think that in that series it came down to the experience factor more than like half a dozen possessions during the series.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 over the course of the 7 games where it's like, man, you know what? There's that moment. There's that one little moment where that, like, God, it just was just enough to get Golden State past the Kings. In this, I think it's so much more evident that, man, you know what? Amen Thompson is just not quite sure what to do yet.
Well, I think that's part of it. Number one, the Kings weren't young. They were young, but they weren't young.
Yeah,
that's what we're talking
22
about.
22 and 23.
Yeah, and some guys had playoff experience. I mean, I guess you can say some guys on the Rockets have had playoff experience, but again, some of the guys they're relying on are so incredibly young that they have no idea what they're doing.
Right.
The other thing is that the Kings and Warriors series was decided when De'Aaron Fox broke the tip of his finger.
Yeah, conceivably, for sure. But I think in the context of even that series, there were just plays that happened down the stretch where you're like, oh man.
Yeah.
Like there were a couple times where that and it's again, I shouldn't have even brought this up because that's not the conversation I wanted to have. The point is, it didn't look that glaring in that King series. The experience of it. It's very glaring in this series.
Oh yeah.
And Amen Thompson, the thing that's so scary is you're starting to see him figure it out. Offensively, I mean, defensively he's great. But offensively, you're starting to see the things click and you're starting to see him figure out, okay, here's how to navigate a defense when they're not defending me because I'm not going to shoot a three. And okay, this is the strength with which I need to go to the rack. This is the force I need to play with. And you just, it's not like he's deer in headlights. It's not like, oh man, Amen Thompson's a no-show. It's just he's figuring it out and he's learning. And that's scary.
Well, I think the other piece to that too is that's why you want your young team to go to the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's why it does matter. You do not play for draft picks at the end of a season. You play to try to get your team that little bit of experience. And that little bit of experience that we're seeing a player in Amen Thompson have to play a different way in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. When he gets to game one next season, and he's got all this experience and he's going to be able to work the offseason and think, okay, that's how I have to play from here on out. And I have footage and I know the physicality. I know what it feels like. Mm. What he might look like next year is just off the charts.
Yeah.
Just off the charts good. And, you know, again, I think they're already preparing to clear out other young players who are really good but who aren't going to be great. And try to make sure that he is the focal point moving forward. I think Jalen Green, I think Jabari Smith Jr., like there are players on that team that could be had because they're going to want to focus everything on Şengün and on Amen Thompson.
Jabari Smith Jr. quietly having a very nice series too. He is a player. Well, what we're going to do is as teams get eliminated, we'll start taking a look at pieces the Kings might be able to snag from that team. And we'll do a deep dive on the Rockets for sure if and when they're eventually eliminated from the playoffs. Alperen Şengün was unbelievable last night.
Oh, yeah.
The Warriors outside of Draymond Green just have no answer for him.
He's like
even,
Gumby.
And even Draymond has an answer sometimes.
Yeah.
He just, yeah, the no, his bones are rubber. He just has no, but man, it's not just that like, oh, I'm just going to be bigger than you and bully my way to the basket and go. He's got spin moves. He's got touch. He's got that little floater. He's got a little jumper. His bag, when he's driving, is just so deep.
It's the footwork, man.
Yes.
That play where he made the spin move and then put like the little half step down to give him the push.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my goodness. Somebody learn how to do footwork at a young age. Like it's shocking. He is by far the best footwork post maneuver in the league right now.
Yeah.
Like there is nobody with that arsenal in the post. I don't like the next best is probably LeBron. Like I don't think that there is anyone that has that type. I mean, you could say Jokic has some of that
Jokic's
stuff.
Jokic's game is different, though.
Yeah. Watching him maneuver in the post is just wild.
It is. It's so annoying because I want to not, because he doesn't move conventionally.
Yeah.
So I want to be like, he's like, come on. But
that can't be real.
But you can't. He's so freaking good, dude.
Yeah.
Alas, it didn't matter last night. Warriors win 109-106. Brandon Pajemski, really good game. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Buddy Hield, who Steve Kerr said in his post-game locker room speech, this is the first time these words have ever been spoken. Buddy Hield, you set the tone defensively.
Ever.
Insane. He had a couple of big shots last night. I expect next game to be a disaster. I'm prepared for this now.
You're prepared.
I'm prepared.
Live by the buddy, die by the buddy.
I can't wait for the dribble it off the foot.
Which he had, and they didn't review, and like, oh my gosh, that was clearly off a buddy. What are we doing?
Yeah, that was tough.
Wild.
All right, you want to give away $500?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. ESPN1320.com. This is the Jump Shot Jackpot giveaway, courtesy of Folsom Lake Chrysler, Dodge Jeep Ram, home of the big guy, Vince Bloom. Here's your word that you're going to enter at the contest page on ESPN1320.com for your chance to win $500. You ready?
I'm ready.
Steal.
Steal?
Steal. S-T-E-A-L. Steal.
I'm here for it.
Like a steal in basketball. Steal. S-T-E-A-L is your word for the Jump Shot Jackpot giveaway, courtesy of Folsom Lake Chrysler, Dodge Jeep Ram, home of the big guy, Vince Bloom. It's your chance to win $500. Stay locked in, though, to ESPN 1320, because D'Lo and KC are also going to give you a word during their show. And that will be another chance to enter. It'll be a different word, a second chance to enter to win $500.
That's right.
We're giving you two chances. Take advantage of both of those. And we're also, speaking of D'Lo and KC, we're going to have the handoff. That's coming up next. James Hamm, Joe Brazil, I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. And this is ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader. Now, back to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
James Hamm's there. Joe Brazil behind the glass. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. And it is 11:45. You know what that means.
It's time now for the handoff. Taking the handoff from James and Kyle today, here's D'Lo, Damian Barling.
Hey, man.
Hey. What's going on, man?
The ultimate needle mover is here.
The ultimate needle mover. God mode himself.
Have you ever seen a playoff team? You know what? We got Doug Christie is the head coach of the Sacramento Kings, right? Moved by the Kings?
Yeah, I think so. I think Doug earned that spot last year. I think he has a rapport with the players. The example that gets – one thing I try to lean on is Doug coached this team for 51 games.
Yeah.
That's a large sample size.
Very good sample.
Like every time I get antsy about thinking about someone like Antonio Pierce, where for whatever reason, Josh McDaniels so bad, just getting him. Now that I don't believe this was Mike Brown with 15 guys in that locker room. Yeah, maybe it was Mike Brown for one or two, but it wasn't Mike Brown for 15. Just getting McDaniels out of there just brought a sense of like you could breathe.
Yeah.
Right. And the Raiders experienced like a glow with Antonio Pierce as the head coach. How good of a coach was Antonio Pierce? I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. I don't know. But I know in that moment that team needed him. That was like seven games, something like that. Like Doug coached 51 games. He coached more games last year than Mike Brown did. So if this had happened with 10 games in the season – you know, if they had gone Memphis Grizzlies or whoever and fired someone really, fired Mike really, really late, I don't know that I would feel the same way. But Doug coached 51 games last year, and I think he showed us enough, even with a limited staff, a limited coaching staff, that he could do some good things in this league. And I don't think anyone is more committed to their job or the city that they do their job in than Doug Christie is the Kings in the city of Sacramento.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And I've seen so many other times where the midseason coaching change just did not work at all. And in fact, it never worked at all in Sacramento that I can remember, where a coach stepped in midseason and even got remotely close to 500. So to be able to go 27-24, like it's not the greatest. He didn't just blow the doors off of everybody, but at the same time, after you gave him the job, you traded your best player. Mm-hmm. You provided like so much chaos, and he was able to keep the group together and trudge through. And we were talking about this, you know, watching Eric Spoelstra lose control of a Heat team and have them get clubbed like that.
Yeah.
That happens. And so when I look at,
it doesn't happen to him.
It doesn't. But when you look at the play-in game and you're like, everyone's so disappointed by the play-in game.
Yeah.
Look what just happened to the Miami Heat.
Yeah.
And can I real quick, if that's the reaction, if that's where people genuinely have a problem with hiring Doug Christie, is what happened in the play-in game. That feels like a Kings move that they would get fried for. Is like, Doug was the guy until this play-in game nonsense. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll scrap this. Like, no, man, they had 51 games to watch and go, man, you know what? And they're around. They're around the building. They're around the players.
Yeah.
They go, man, you know what? This is the guy. Pulling the plug on that because of what happened in the play-in game, that's the disaster move to me.
I'm with you.
If you've moved forward this entire 51-game stretch going, gosh, Doug is, okay, that's our guy for next year. Roster needs to be different, but we like what he's shown us. Blowing that up because of a one-game sample is exactly what gets the Kings into trouble. So if that's where, because there's a lot of people in the chatty house who are not super thrilled with the Doug Christie hire. If that's what it is, it's like, God, the Washington game late in the season and then the play-in game. God, this guy just, oh. That to me is overreactionary.
Yeah.
And that's what you can't have in this spot.
No, you had to evaluate Doug in his total body of work.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think you had to evaluate him in the sense of what was the circumstances in which he took over.
Mm-hmm.
Then what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then the De'Aaron stuff happened. And it wasn't just a swift, clean break with De'Aaron. Like, mm-hmm. it lingered for a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
He oversaw that. Then just the regular trade deadline. He had to oversee that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got guys like Luke Louts leaving. You got guys like Wes Wilcox leaving. You got all of the very obvious turmoil. Dissension was mm-hmm. the word I was going to use. I don't know if that's the right word, but turmoil within the front office.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you, Doug had to navigate all of that.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, every coach has to do this, but he, you know, you got to navigate injuries. You got to navigate, you know, people mm-hmm. being in and out of the lineup. You got to navigate a rookie who you brought in. He wasn't ready. You had to send him down. You got to judge when to bring him back. And that's probably one that the Kings deserve a little bit of credit for. Is you're better off leaving Devin Carter away too long
mm-hmm.
than bringing him back too fast.
No doubt.
Because the worst thing you could do is bring him back and he still sucks. Now you're killing his confidence. Now, even the most confident young man thinking, oh, I know it's just a rehab. I know it's I just need some time. And then you get brought back up too soon and you still stink. Yeah, that's going to be tough for him to come back from.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they may have waited just like an extra couple of days, extra little stretch to allow him to be a part of Stockton, develop a little bit more, then bring him back up. And Doug trying to figure out, okay, how can I build this young man's confidence and how can I see what we can get from him
mm-hmm.
out on the floor? That's another issue. It was just another obstacle that Doug had to navigate around this year. And I think all of that needed to be taken into consideration by Scott Perry and everybody involved in this hiring process.
Yeah, I would add the one other thing that he did late in the season, which I think we kind of gloss over, is that he like unwound the clock on the Malik Monk situation. Like, we forget, like, Malik got pushed back to the bench, which is the mm-hmm. best thing for this team moving forward, most likely.
And he did it so subtly.
Yeah, I mean, Malik coming back off an injury, like, oh, okay, Malik's sixth man again. But we kept saying, like, you can't go back from that, right? Like, we've said it a million times. Yeah. And Mike couldn't. There was no way Mike could go back from it. Yep. Doug found a way late in the season and said, you know what? Yep. I'm going to do what's best for the team, not what's best for one guy. Yep. Not what one guy wants, and I don't care how much the dissension is. I'll pay for it later. but I'm going to do this. And I, to be honest with you, whether it worked or not, it was still the right move for this franchise moving forward, is for Malik to be an elite six man and not like a league average starter.
Right. Yeah, I think that's true. I didn't even thought about that.
Yeah.
Just very quiet. Just very quietly. Hey, Malik's back to six man again. Anyways, what?
No, first we're going to introduce him as a starter.
Oh, yeah.
Then we're going to put him on the bench and wait till James asks the question after the game.
It'll be very
instead
subtle.
Of before. It was all James's fault. If James had just asked before the game, we all would have known. No dissension. Doug even said James. He might not have said James.
No, he said Jason.
Oh, it was Jason.
It was, because Jason usually asked, and Doug usually says, I'm not going to tell you. Mm-hmm. Doug wasn't going to tell him.
Of course
him.
He right. wasn't. Yeah, yeah. Of course
Come
he wasn't.
Come on now. Man. It's a cat and mouse game.
You know who's never going to not ask again, though? Jason.
Yeah, right.
Real quick, have you ever seen a playoff team quit the way Miami did last night? I don't think I've ever seen it to that degree. That
a
was
Miami
crazy.
Team? Or you said, have I ever seen like the
like,
Heat?
Any team.
Yeah, I've seen teams quit before.
In the playoffs like that?
Yeah, man, like down 3-0. I've just never seen it from Miami. I've never seen it from an Eric Spoelstra-led team. We've seen teams die in the postseason before. We've seen teams go, they know they have no shot in the series and kind of, you know, Cancun it. That was pretty bad last night, though. That was definitely one of the worst. And coming off of the heels of what happened
that's
game
it.
Before,
that's
it's
it.
Pretty crazy.
They lost that game by 37 in game 3. The Eric Spoelstra, Pat Riley, Miami Heat have built their reputation on, that's not happening again. And then they go down 30-8.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
But it's about right, man. They're just not that. We're super talented.
Yeah.
It's not that good of a team.
Trading your star in the middle of the season doesn't seem to be the move. Just saying.
Yeah, maybe not the best. That was a tough look. Like, Eric Spoelstra has never looked broken at a press conference before, but that man was just flabbergasted by what his team did yesterday. Yeah.
Tough to watch.
Yeah.
What do you guys have coming up on D'Lo and Casey?
A lot of this, for sure. We're going to talk about the officiating a little bit. We'll talk about Shaq at Sac State. Trista Crick at 2 o'clock. Jason Jones in the 3 o'clock hour. So,
busy day.
Tuesday.
Busy day on a Tuesday. D'Lo and KC, they're coming up next. For James Hamm and Joe Brazil, I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders, and we are sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. I promise we're back tomorrow.
We are.
We will be back tomorrow at 10 a.m.
Allegedly.
Right. According to sources, we'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. right here on this
not real
radio
unless
station.
Shams tweets it.
ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. Drink water. Be nice, people. Play-o!